This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate Gee. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every other Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. Hey everyone, Nate G here. Just on before the start of the show to make an announcement. Instead of releasing new episodes weekly, we'll now be releasing new episodes every other week. I'm still getting all of your just wonderful, insightful questions, so please keep sending them in through the website, beatyourgenes.org. In the meantime, enjoy today's show, and I'll talk with you guys next episode. All right. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here along with Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Lyle, Dr. Hawk, how are you both doing this evening?
Yeah, he reverted back to the normal order, Jen.
The patriarchy has been rightfully restored.
There you go. It's all good, Nathan. Uh-oh. There you go.
Jen's blood pressure is much higher now, I think.
That puts me in good condition for being all, you know, sharp-tongued on the show.
There you go. Aware. Good. There you go.
You have an angry woman.
Yes. So
no, yeah, nothing worse.
Yeah, perfect. There you go. All good. All planned.
All right. Very good.
All right. All right, let's just get straight to the questions. Dear doctors, if it is true that we can't change people, why would evolution waste energy to engineer feelings in us that make us feel inclined to try to change others? If we can't change others, why do people come to believe that they can or enter relationships with others on that premise?
This is a really great question. Somebody is paying attention to what we're saying and they're thinking carefully. So I love the question. The reason is that other people's behavior is modifiable under and even permanently under cost benefit pressure. So I use the example of you can have the not nastiest mafia chieftain who would just as soon slaughter anybody that you know grins at him, but you can turn that person into a puppy dog by putting a loaded 45 right in the middle of his forehead. Okay, you can make him talk, like he's kissing the ring of the Pope. So this is in essence, you know that your actions and your consequences that you put on people can influence them. That doesn't mean you change them permanently. It means that you can mold their behavior as long as you put the pressure on them to what it is that you want. So it might feel to you very inconvenient that your child is a flake with a messy room, and so you want them. You'd want them to not be a flake and not to have a messy room. So now it is interesting that people believe that somehow we can modify this person permanently. Now there's a reason why you might think so. There's more than one reason. One reason is that in some ways you do modify people permanently and you become permanently modified when you get new information. So that's not a personality change. All that ever changes, personality doesn't change at all. All that changes is the cost-benefit analysis. So let's suppose that, lo and behold, we'll take a very sort of a very unlikely example. Not totally unlikely. Like my sister was a real slob when we were growing up. She had a totally messy room. It was just a total fiasco. Now, interestingly enough, when she grew up, she became extremely orderly. And she was an attorney. And so she was meticulously orderly, including in her own house. And you might say, well, how is that even possible? And the answer is the cost benefit changed. So it would have been in her career, it would have been basically impossible to do the kind of work that she did with the conscientiousness that she had, to do it a super good job if you were in chaos, couldn't do it. You might say, well, what happened? You know, where did this conscientiousness come from and where was it when she was growing up? It was there. My sister was a straight A student, valedictorian of her high school. Okay, so the conscientiousness was there. She just didn't give a rat's ass about her room. Couldn't care less. Okay, now, didn't feel like it was enough of her place and her control and everything else under the sun. So who knows what CBs were going on there. We lived in terror of being nominated by my father to go out into the garage and help him clean out and organize the garage. That's the thing that my sister and I, to this day, we laugh about. It's like
we had the same terror in my family. That was like the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
My dad would a couple times a year be like, yep. Kids.
Yes.
Join me.
Yes, exactly. That's funny that we had the same thing, because my dad yeah. had this thing. And if the thing is that our garage was small enough and so full of my dad's garage sale purchased crap that not two kids couldn't fit in there. Only one could fit in. So as a result, it was like eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I mean, your number either came up for the lottery or your sister or brother did. So it was the two of us. And neither one of us bitched about it because we were both on the same team against a common enemy. And, you know, if your Saturday happened to be the one that got sacrificed, oh, well, you just got to go take it for the team. There was no bitching that the other one got away with it. So, but I could imagine my sister's brain running a CB that basically said, well, if my room's in chaos, dad's more worried about my chaotic room and he's yelling about that every now and then. That's, than it is, you know, in other words, if it comes down to a Saturday, Doug, you come with me, Margie, you clean your room. Okay. So, who knows what was going on in the depths of my sister's unconscious mind about what CB she was running. But what we did see was we saw that it changed. So you will see, so you can imagine that as a parent or as a mentor or a teacher or anything else or a spouse, you could see that if you could explain and show and get somebody to do something differently, they might change permanently in that arena. Now, it won't be because their personality changed. It will be because their cost-benefit analysis of that particular narrow situation has changed. And so that is true, along with the fact that if we put actual pressure on people to change, in other words, we put consequences to their current behavior pattern under pressure, i.e., if you don't quit drinking, I'm going to leave you. Okay, so it's like, wow, if you are valued enough as a mate, that might be what causes somebody to put the bottle down. Okay, so this is why it is that people would have perfectly reasonable engineering that would be encouraging them to feel like they could, quote, change other people. So the concept of changing other people is a muddy concept. So, and therein lies the answer to the mystery that sits underneath this question. The fact that the personality structure is not changeable has not been known and wouldn't have been encoded as a concept in the genetic code. Okay, so it's in there, actually, in some ways. There are vestiges of that. In other words, you if you don't, quote, like somebody, and you get a feeling that you just don't like them, that's not likely to change. And even if they start acting somewhat differently towards you, you may smell a rat and feel like, no, I know what your basic personality is, and my feelings towards you actually aren't changing, even though your behavior towards me is changing. So you certainly have the ability to sniff out the notion that that an individual's human nature is quite stable. What you also, though, understand is that you can influence another person's behavior pattern, either in the short term under pressure or in the long term under effectively getting them to see the world differently than they currently see it, and thereby changing their CB on their behavior pattern. So that's what that's the answer to what is actually an excellent question, and I think that resolves the mystery.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I would just throw in there.
Hold on, Jen. Doug, are you on speaker by any chance?
Am I on speaker?
Yeah, your phone sounds a little distant. I just want to make sure you're not on speaker, that's all.
I am not on speaker.
Okay, perfect. Never mind. Okay, go ahead, Dr. Hawk.
I would just throw in there that I think that is all completely true, but not only do we have this intuition that we have changed our cost-benefit under carrots or sticks in some form in various relationships that we've had, and that has looked like behavioral and personality change, and that we've seen other people do it. So we have this sort of life experience and intuitive feeling that that's possible. But let's not forget that there's also an entire self-help, self-transformation, military-industrial complex that sort of doubles down on this idea, and that you have everywhere you turn people with doctor in front of their name or PhD after their name in positions of authority telling you that this is not only possible, but that it's the way to improve your relationships. It's the way to change the whole outcome of the dynamic between the two of you. So it's not like you're just coming to this conclusion and acting on it on your own accord. You're getting supported and reinforced in that direction by every self-help book, every magazine article, every episode of Oprah and Dr. Phil, and just everything you could possibly source. Sorry about all of my computer blowing up in the background. I thought it was muted.
But no, that's all good.
Yeah.
You know, that's great, Jen.
A client.
Yeah. I had I had barely caught that, but of course there's actually been, you know, a profound education for 100 years, basically behind both Freudian and early learning theory that is now permeated all of social science in the 20th century. And then, as Jen points out, it's actually weaved its way into the business of human relationships and advice. So, God, yeah, I've completely forgot about that. Excellent. Yeah. All good.
Would you say there's certain personality characteristics that will cause people to try to change others more than others? Like, the thing I can think of is a more disagreeable person.
Disagreeable. There's just more of a tendency to think that you know the right way to do things, and that if only everybody would just do it the way that you do it, then everything would just be fine. That's just implicit in the disagreeable worldview. So I would think that would be the number one. And then super conscientious people also suffer under this distortion where it's like they cannot understand why and how the rest of the world is not the same 99th percentile level of conscientiousness that they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how about intelligence?
I think that contains its own ability to discern that it's not possible. If you've got very high IQ, you're not trying to drag other people along with you most of the time. I would say, I don't know, Doug, what would you say about that?
We're now starting to parse this down through personality. And I think we already have the broad strokes. The way I look at psychology with personality being a part of it is sort of the earth and the moon. That psychology, all of the neural circuits that make up what a human is, that's like the earth. It's massively bigger than the moon. But you can't understand life on earth unless you understand the moon and its influence. And that's what personality is. So the individual differences, variables are there. But in answer to the question, the big issue is that you do know that other people's behavior is modifiable. You do know that you can have an influence. You don't understand the nature of that influence. You weren't designed to. You're just designed to know that you can influence them. And so that's why it is that despite the fact that you cannot change their personalities, you would still have a motive that would be driving a CB on putting that energy in, because in fact their behavior is modifiable under pressure. So that then we can parse, then we can jump from the earth to the moon, and we can say, well, why are some people more susceptible to that, to having that CB trigger? And I think Jen's point is immediately correct, which is that the disagreeable people are going to be far more likely to be putting pressure on other people than anybody else. Then you're going to throw in some conscientiousness, and then we can start talking about everything else. But now we're talking about the smaller pieces. Biggest piece of the puzzle is that there's a CB behind it, and that CB is legitimate.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a really good framework for people just at the level of principle, because so often we have, you know, people who get, they get into the idea of the Big Five and they really want to understand themselves, but they get a little deterministic about it. So they get a little like, oh, I took a quiz that says I'm 78th percentile conscientiousness, and therefore that's going to create these sorts of specific problems for me. And they make these law-like inferences based on their personality and how it's going to impact something like this, when really they should be oriented toward the earth-like rules governing
yes.
the system that you're talking about,
and
looking at personality as a filter on it that is really dynamic, that is subject to all kinds of contingencies and interactional effects with other personality characteristics and other, what we would call skittles or information distortions or just so many different things. So really your personality is not this. It's stable in some sense, but it's not a stable variable that you can use to prescribe these kinds of things in the way that people sometimes want to.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Great.
Wonderful.
All right. What else we got?
Our next question. Nathan? Dear doctors, my question is regarding my older brother. He's always been very private about his relationship with his significant other, to the point that it makes our family uncomfortable. She is his first relationship, and she's the one who heavily pursued him. They've been together on and off for 3 years. She was a foreign exchange student when they met, failed to meet her requirements for work visa this spring, and so my brother finally told us that they got married this past May to keep her in the States. He did not seek anyone's input. He knows we've all been uncomfortable with her this whole time, and now he's waited 3 months to tell us that he got married. He's not religious in any way. He's atheist, actually, and also stated before that he does not really believe in the institution of marriage. He also expressed as recently as 1 year ago, he's not even sure if he likes her, but he does enjoy her attention and having her as company. I guess my question here is twofold. Is it worth expressing concern to him about this action at this point, being that it's done and has been done for 3 months? It was a particularly hard blow to my parents, who are practicing Catholics, and I don't see how he could fail to see the hurt it could cause them. Second, from a gene standpoint, why did he do this? I know it all comes down to cost-benefit analysis, but I guess I'm just struggling with the fact that he really seemed to think it was more beneficial to secretly snap decision, get married, without thinking of the long-term consequences of his actions. I know it sounds like a mess. Trust me, it feels like one to me too. I'm just in complete disbelief, and I'd appreciate any insight on this one.
Yeah, this is a nice, messy family thing. This is a Jen.
Nice, messy family thing. This is me with my sort of general, the same kind of framework and approach that I bring to all of these kinds of questions. Like the details of any of these, we get a lot of questions that are sort of, I would lump in the same kind of category. Like, I have an adult family member who is doing something I don't like. And this adult family member is making decisions that I don't understand and I don't approve of. It's having this effect on us and upsetting us. I mean, there are all kinds of tells in this question. You're simultaneously expressing confusion that your brother decided to do this in secret without cluing the family into the process, but you're also letting me know in the question that you have been signaling your disapproval for it as a family the whole time. So there's really no surprise that your brother would choose to take this into offline and not involve the family in the decision process. He's running his cost-benefit analysis. You are not privy to all of the components of that cost-benefit analysis. You don't know what his real motivation is. You don't know why he's doing this. There certainly he you know, the assumption that he's failing to see the hurt that it causes your parents. I doubt that that's true. I'm sure that that is part of the CB, but you don't know what kinds of pressures are being exerted in other parts of that cost-benefit analysis to make that more compelling for him to take that action and to give his wife this status through marriage. So you don't know all the components. He may not even be consciously aware of all of the reasons that he's doing what he's doing, but the fact remains that he is an adult who is sovereign unto himself and able to make these decisions whether or not you're happy about them. So I always go back in this kind of situation to in my woo-woo days, there's a very well-known, probably many listeners have encountered this particular guru. Her name is Byron Katie, and she's really kind of a glorified CBT type who wraps her CBT thinking in a lot of woo-woo language. But she does have this very useful thing that she does, where she'll listen to somebody, come to one of her seminars and give this kind of question about some family. Usually it's an adult child or a parent or an adult family member who's doing something upsetting. And she'll just kind of sit back, and she gets this particular look on her face, and she's like, whose business are you in? Are you in your business? Are you in somebody else's business? And it's like this decision rule. It's, are you, whose life are you worrying about? And are these things that belong to you to worry about or not? And in this case, it's not affecting you directly. It's just something that you're sort of opposed to in principle, and that you wouldn't have made, you were perceiving that you wouldn't have made the same decisions under the same conditions. And we also don't know that that's true, by the way, but that's where this discontent is coming from. So my advice to you is just generally to, let your brother run his own show. Get in touch with the fact that this is not negatively impacting your life and your existence in any kind of meaningful way, that perhaps your parents are upset about it, but that's between your brother and your parents. And you again are sort of tangential to that process. Stand back, let him live. It's probably going to run its course. It probably won't last forever. And you're never going to fully understand all of the different things that are going on here.
Perfect.
Wonderful.
I just can't, I have nothing. I mean, I would say, when I listened to this, Jen went more broadly on this, there's different ways of looking. So she says, listen, you don't know the CB, what's going on. And I start scrolling through the CB. First relationship for this guy. Okay. I like her attention. Well, what attention is that? Okay. Yeah. What do we mean? All right. And second of all, also if it was his first relationship, that was sort of tell me that it's not that easy for him to get relationships. And so, and to have a relationship and be to be married, that sort of gives you real world credibility. So when you go past this relationship, it's like, well, yeah, I was married. It's like, oh, so then you're not a wallflower that never had a girlfriend before. Is that right? And the answer is, yeah. Now I've actually was a married guy a couple of 3 years ago. Married some girl from Russia or whatever it was. Well, that's a way better story. So again, as just exactly as Jen was saying, we have no idea what CB is going on inside that head. And our job is to let him run his own show. Absolutely.
Yeah. I always assume when I see a question like that with the, that you don't know the CB, she could have blackmail on him. It could be some weird sex thing. It could be like he could have, run into some trouble in business with her father, and he's being coerced into it. I mean, there's an infinite number of weird things that could be going on here, and he is not necessarily going to be upfront about all those weird things. So just stand back and let people live their lives.
It's quite an imagination there. You and I need to meet more.
my imagination was already pretty good with my openness, but then yeah. you know as well as I do in this job, you talk to a lot of people, you realize there's a lot of crazy stuff going on out in the world.
Sure.
And you gain an appreciation for the situations that people are facing and the ways that they're trying to resolve them and doing their best the whole time. But that it's a big world with a lot of different types of relationships and a lot of lot of stuff going on.
You got it.
Is there anything you'd recommend for this particular listener to do to calm down those feelings that she feels, obviously? She's in disbelief. She feels like, I guess, she doesn't have as much status with this brother that she thought she did. All those types of feelings that you can think of. Is there anything she can do other than just kind of ignore him, essentially, and just cut him out?
I'd say that's a good question, Nathan. I think the issue is, the first conceptual thing to understand is that he is running a brilliant CB. You just don't know what it is, but his brain is running such complicated cost benefit analysis. He doesn't even know all the factors that are going into it. So therefore, what we want to be is respectful of somebody else's process. So this isn't causing him to get cancer. It's not causing him to be bankrupt. It's not causing him to get thrown in jail. There's nothing illegal, terrible, humiliating for the family or anything else. The parents may not like it because this would-be theoretical Catholic boy was supposed to marry, I don't know, some Catholic girl and supposed to have kids with her. Oh, well, too bad. That is of no consequence. Your situation needs to be that, what is your objective? Your objective needs to be, or ought to be, essentially, in relationship to your brother, it should be, what is serving his happiness? That's what we need to be thinking about. And so, and that means we're not trying to forcibly interfere in anybody's life. So it wouldn't be like, well, what about my parents' happiness? What if we force him to annul the marriage and then marry a Catholic girl? No, that's not optimizing life experience of anybody involved here. That's the parents worried about their pseudo esteem with the village. Forget it. What we want to do is we want to have a philosophy that, if you care about a person, what we want is we want their experience, to be as good as it can be, without impacting ours or costing us a great deal. So it costs us nothing to have the realization that he's going through his own process, he's making his own moves, and all we want to be is signaling that we love the guy. That's all. That's all you need to do. And if you do that and realize that this is not cancer, this is not jail, therefore this is part of the life process for him, and that's all it is. And you just let it unfold. We have no idea. There's a great quote. Somebody could find it for me. I don't have a copy of How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World in my hands right now. Let's see if I can find it.
I've got it.
You do.
I've got it right somewhere on my shelf here. Yeah.
There's a quote, Jen, if you can find it. And you may be able to, I don't know that book is indexed. I think it is. But if we look up Herbert Spencer, okay? Herbert Spencer was one of the great systematic thinkers of the 19th century. He's actually the man who coined the phrase survival of the fittest. And he actually coined it before Darwin wrote The Origin of Species, by the way. So I believe it was after Darwin that it became famous with respect to Darwinian thought. But Spencer was a great systematizer of thought. And he has a quote somewhere in How I Found Freedom in a Free World about his, it's at the end of a chapter. It's in one of those little footnotes. It might be chapter 3 or 4 or 5 or 6.
The pious quote? No.
It's one about being, when he sees that, his investment decisions that he told a friend about, that the friend went bankrupt, and that his son, that he worked so hard to be. What's that?
I've got two quotes. There's one about shielding men from the effects of folly. That's the other one.
Yeah, it's about his son, turned out worse than most? No, there's another quote.
I'm looking at the end notes. So,
right.
Yeah.
There's one more.
They're both great. There's volumes might be written upon the impiety of the pious.
No, that's great. That's sweet.
And then there's the ultimate result of shielding men from the effects of folly is to fill the world with fools.
No, there's one more. And the other, and even though those are really good, there's a third one.
Yeah.
And see if you can find it quickly. But it basically says, when I look back at my life and I look at all the things that I earnestly sought, and all of the Please read it for people.
Yeah, the index was incorrect. It told me it was page 107, but it's actually page 108. So okay. When I remember how many of my private schemes have miscarried, how speculations have failed, agents proved dishonest, marriage been a disappointment, how I did but pauperize the relative I sought to help, how my carefully governed son has turned out worse than most children, how the thing I desperately strove against as a misfortune did me immense good, how while the objects I ardently pursued brought me little happiness when gained, most of my pleasures have come from unexpected sources. When I recall these and hosts of like facts, I am struck with the incompetence of my intellect to prescribe for society. Oh, that's awesome.
It's awesome.
And that should be emblazoned.
Yes.
Yeah, really, people need to take that to heart.
Yeah. And that's where we have to have this notion of, you know, let the reins go and let the people that we love find their own way, be supportive, but realize that they have to, you know, they have to walk in their own moccasins, and our job is to let them know that we care.
Well, that's so important too, just like we really don't want to let this question go without making that point, that even if he is completely misguided, and
yes,
this is like he's not optimizing his happiness, and this is a huge mistake, and he will, you know, get through this process and even need your help extracting himself from it at some point, which is possible. You know, people get themselves into that situation. You want to be in that position as his sibling of just signaling unconditional support as much as you can for that time when he may come to you and feel safe coming to you, rather than where I think he's been vis-a-vis the family, which is knowing that you disapprove and therefore being incentivized to hide things from you and to not include you in his decision making. So to the extent that you can be supportive of his process and his happiness, just, you know, being there in that non-judgmental supportive position is going to be the best thing to do.
Beautiful. Got it.
All right.
All right.
All right. Our next question. Another young man here. I have a 15-year-old son who did poorly in school after it moved online last spring. Eventually, he stopped doing any of his work and lied to my husband and I about it. He's now returning to a hybrid model in a couple of weeks, and I'm already dreading the acrimony that will follow. My husband is our son's stepfather with no biological children of his own. In the past, there has been conflict between my husband and I about how to handle this. I think my husband is draconian and he thinks I'm too relaxed. How much freedom is appropriate to give kids when it comes to schoolwork? What about lying? Is there any way to protect my relationships with both my husband and my son through this? And finally, why do some step-parents like my husband get so invested in kids that will not be carrying their genes forward?
Give that one back to Doug.
Yeah, we could just sort of run everything that just Jen said in the previous one. Okay, this is a tricky place that this woman finds herself in. So let's talk through this from different angles, because she's got more than one agenda. So she's got a relationship with her husband. The relationship has a relationship with both her and her child. And then the child has a relationship with her and with her, with the child's stepfather. So in other words, there's a whole bunch of relationships and a whole bunch of agendas. So let's begin with where I think the root pressure is. So I think the root pressure comes from the stepfather being, you know, highly conscientious, varying degrees of disagreeable. And so therefore, this is we're not exactly sure what the reasons are inside his head, but I could read the tea leaves and sort of guess that possibly part of it comes from wanting this flake, the young 15-year-old flake, to actually get his act together, get busy, get good grades, get on a path where he's going to be financially self-sufficient so I don't have to be supporting him in his young adulthood. So I could absolutely see that. I could be, of course, I could be wrong about this, but it's going to turn out that the scientific evidence would suggest this pretty strongly, that the reason why most stepfathers are supportive of stepchildren is because of the sexual importance of the mother to them. Okay, so that's so this, it isn't because they're so crazy about the stepchildren and their success independently. So that is the genetic reason why it is that this pathway would go in terms of stepfatherhood attention to stepchild success. Now, so I can see that the kid's flakiness would be irritating as all get out, because that would be basically like, whoa, that means at 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 27, 28, 32, I'm going to be supporting you because you're a flake. So we got to like get you whipped into shape now because it's finally getting serious and I should be almost at the end of my provisioning and you're frustrating the daylights out of me because you're not doing anything. So I could see that as background music to the quote draconian frustration of the stepfather, i.e. the husband. Now, I could be wrong. It could be just sheer flat out achievement, natural achievement motivation and high conscientiousness on his part that is quite independent of the concerns about the provisioning, extended provisioning issue. Now, that's where the pressure is coming. So mom is, quote, not as upset about the kid's flakiness. However, we're not completely happy about the fact that the kid is flaking out. He's lying, of course. Why? Because there's conflict of interest between him and his parents, particularly his stepfather, and therefore he's just going to kick the can down the road, tell you he did things that he didn't do, that he doesn't want to do and has no intention of doing. Perfectly understandable. So where would I come in on this? I would come in on this as totally relaxed about this child's performance in school. What do we care? This is this kid's life. This kid will not sink or swim his life for what he does in the next 2 or 3 years. He's clearly not motivated. He's seeing that the CB, from his standpoint, about whether or not he does well in school or not, or even passes, doesn't seem to matter to him. So why should we care? Boils down to the famous "Why Mom Cares" speech, which is that why should we be panicked about his sexual success? Let him worry about it. He'll take care of himself. He'll figure it out. All we have to do is give him $20 in a suitcase on his 18th birthday, and suddenly he'll become incredibly responsible. Okay, so I don't really, when we really boil down and try to figure out where all this anxiety is coming from, it's just coming from the fact that you know, everybody wants him to do more than he wants to do for himself right now, and why should we care? Now, she might care because of the constraint of mating choice in the Stone Age, that the difference between two options, if he loses one of the two, in the Stone Age, there could be a significant difference between the 8 he could have gotten and the 5 that he's going to get because there's only four young ladies available. But that's not true in the modern environment. So the modern environment, he's going to get his due. He's not going to take some 30th percentile hit because there weren't enough options and he was too flaky to beat out his competitor. So that's why we don't have to worry about that situation. Now, so my attitude would be I would have the bar very, very low for this young man. It should be at pass. So the attitude should be, listen, you either pass your classes and you pass the semester, or if you don't pass, that's fine. I don't care if you pass or not. But you will lose your cell phone and you will lose your computer. There'll be no access to the internet and there'll be no access to your cell phone for the next 6 months. So I don't really care if you pass or not. I just know that if you don't pass, that's what's going to happen to you. Oh my God, he'll die without a cell phone. How will we know when he's in a ditch on the side of the road with, you know, his 18 drunk buddies and somebody's got a loaded revolver that they stole from their uncle and they're playing Russian roulette? Really? Was that happening in all the days before we had cell phones? No. Okay, so therefore, I don't give a rat's ass if that kid has a cell phone or not. It is not important for his safety. So he's not going to have a car. No car, absolutely not. So he's not going to have a car. He's not going to have a cell phone. He's not going to have a computer. Hey, I hope you like cable television, because that's what you're going to be watching if you don't pass your classes. Now, if you pass...
Reruns of Matlock.
What's that?
Old reruns of Matlock.
Yeah, exactly. The evolution of Andy Griffith. Yep. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So the point is that the bar should be the lowest possible bar, i.e. how I found Freedom in an Unfree World. Let this young man, you know, do whatever it is that he wants to do with some realistic constraints on it. Now, the I would also tell the husband that it might be wise to listen to this answer, or have him book a session with Jen or myself, preferably Jen. the notion is that I have understandable, you know, I have empathy for the situation. I have empathy for the irritable conscientiousness of the husband who's providing for stepchildren and this stepchild who does not have apparently the conscientious genes of the stepfather. And so therefore, I understand that there's dynamics there that are uncomfortable, and that person may need to essentially process their fears and their anxieties and their frustrations and how it is that they all feel like this is unfair. And when they realize that actually, if you're cohabiting this space, the real notion is, hey, you don't get to play the music loud so that it bothers me. You don't get to mess up the kitchen without consequence and leave your crap all over the place and make my life uncomfortable without consequences. Okay? And you don't get to flunk out of school without consequences. But I'm not going to cross-examine you about your homework. I'm not going to ask one thing about it because you're running your own show. And I hope to be there for your graduation. And I hope that works out. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. Because when you're 18, it's $20 in a suitcase, if that's what you've deserved. Okay? And if you've worked hard and we're wealthy and you want to go to Swarthmore and study, you know, Eastern European art because you've deserved it and you got in with excellent grades and you were, you know, excellent in your high school and worked hard on your SATs, and I can afford it, then I'll put you at Swarthmore and you can waste another $200,000 of my money. Fine. Okay? But the bottom line is that it's all about consequences and it's all about letting this kid run their own show. And that's how we do this. So these are conflicts that don't need to be there. And we're not going to modify this child's personality. We can modify their behavior. And we're going to do that with very reasonable consequences for that child to compute the CB.
Wonderful, Dr. Lyle. Thank you very much. It's a very complete answer. I really appreciate that. I'll try to title it so that the mother actually can tell that we're asking the question.
All right.
Our next
question. That's maybe enough.
Oh, that's good for you.
That's enough for one night, Nathan.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, thank you so much.
We got things to do. we're very busy people.
No, all good. That's great. Nathan, did you have something else?
No, I just say, Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, thank you so much. We appreciate the answers and the analysis. It's really much appreciated.
All good. All right, everybody.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Nathan. Gotcha. Right. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.